You're listening to the Young Opportunist Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to the first ever episode of the Founder Series.
Reese, who'd we get?
In this episode, we talk with Josh Reyes, the co-founder and CEO of Minky. Minky is a mobile app that looks like any normal banking application, but gives you all the magic of open and permissionless finance in the background. You basically store your cryptocurrency in an account and earn incredibly high interest on your balance in comparison to a regular savings account.
Right now, we're at the forefront of decentralized finance, or DeFi, so we thought it would be the perfect opportunity to get an expert in the space, also to add an incredible entrepreneur, on the podcast to understand what Minky's mission is, but also break down what is actually going on and learn more about this technology in general.
In this episode, you will learn how to get involved and earn high interest on your cryptocurrency, what Web 1, 2, and 3 is, and why DeFi will revolutionize the fintech ecosystem, and much, much more.
Let's get underway with today's episode. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode. As we said in the introduction, we're joined by the co-founder and CEO of Mink, Josh Reyes. Josh, we're going to be real. We don't know a whole lot about this space. And honestly, the more we kind of dived into Mink and looked up like Web3 and all those different things on the internet, kind of got us more and more nervous for this conversation. But in saying that, that's also the same reason why we were really excited to get you on, is to, I guess, dive into this space as well. But yeah, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks guys. Yeah, good to be here. And yeah, always happy to chat crypto. It's always fun.
So I guess before we dive into Mink and I guess everything else, we would love to, I guess, hear about your personal journey into entrepreneurship and I guess how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, sounds good. So as you can probably tell from my accent, I'm not a Canadian. So I'm Canadian, moved here in 2016. I actually studied finance in uni, I guess probably like you guys. So studied finance in uni, and then end of my degree, year four, went to go interview for internships and everything, and realized that I hated finance, not from the aspect of like the study and what we were learning. I loved that part of it, but I hated it, finance as an industry, in terms of the culture and generally the people. I think it was very hard to see myself like fitting into that workplace. So Andy, you talked to a few people that were 1 or 2 years above you, and they didn't really seem to be having a good time. And I remember I went for one interview and it was just such a bad culture fit. And I told my partner, like, yeah, I need to career. So I wasted 4 years of study, but I need to do it. So I knew I wanted to get into tech. That seemed where people were happy. It seemed like a growing industry. And I decided to teach myself marketing because that seemed like a great way to get into the field, not from a technical background. So did a few classes a semester, kind of self-studied. And then I moved to Australia, where I was the first employee at a startup called SmartMail. So yeah, SmartMail was an email marketing app for e-commerce, primarily focused on Shopify. Joined there as employee number one, and took that to, when I left, I think it was 20 plus employees and 2 million in ARR, which was great. And I kind of did everything there from the start. I did customer service, marketing, and then my role essentially when I left was head of growth, which was mainly product management and a little bit of marketing as well. And I also met my co-founder there, Marcos, who was a CTO and the fourth employee there. And we got into Minky, which it's crypto, which is definitely very different to the email side and SaaS and I guess Web 2. So how to that, actually, I'd always been into crypto since maybe 2014, I think, not from an investing side, but I think I'd probably gone on the Silk Road. Probably shouldn't say what for on a podcast. but I looked at Bitcoin at the time, and I think one of my friends was telling me about it. And I remember it being $8 to buy one Bitcoin, and you had to wire your money to Mt. Gox. And I'm really curious about it. So I went deep into it. I learned about the history of e-gold, which was like another like non-national currency. And then I was like, this is never going to work. The government is just going to totally shut it down. They're going to cut off every route for you to get your Bitcoin. And they're going to go after the exchange so no one can buy it. And I remember, I think, when Mt. Gox got hacked, and I think the Bitfinex hack, which I think was in 2016 or 2017, I was probably going around my uni thinking I was a genius, like telling all of my friends, like, hi, I told you so. But then in 2017, after the Ethereum ICO, I think as a builder and working in Web2 and working in tech, it really inspired me. I think there was a lot more than just the money side of crypto. And you could see that you could build these really amazing products and make actual change. Not that Bitcoin doesn't make change, I think it does, but you could make something really exciting and build products and companies on top of this. So in 2017, we co-founded a company called Sendy with the previous co-founders of SmartEmail, which is a really niche email tool that essentially paid users to open people's emails, because as a new marketer, it was really hard to build an email list. The main use case was as a Substack. If you were doing like a freemium and paid model, you couldn't really build up your Substack from zero. So you could pay a few people to go on a free model and then eventually convert them to a paid if they liked your content. So built that. It was very much like an ICO era project. It didn't really get off the ground. I got to maybe like 3,000 users and 100 newsletters sending with us, but learned a lot. Really like fell in love with the tech, crypto, and just building in the space. And yeah, then got into DeFi and Minky, which is where we're at now.
Wow, that's crazy. And that would have been a really hard pill for you to swallow after finishing your degree and dedicating 4 years to finance, thinking that that's like what you want to dive into. Like, I couldn't imagine how I would feel just like even just been doing that for 4 years and being like, can't wait to get an internship. Because like we're through that stage now at the start of our careers and looking for internships, looking for grad programs in the financy space.
Yeah. So,
and then for you to go and dip your toes into something completely different.
And even on that, it's like finance grads and things like that, that go to graduate positions. So different to when you're in a startup. So when you're in like the finance world, you've got like one spreadsheet or one line item on a spreadsheet that you're looking after, whereas you have a million hats on in the startup world. How'd you find that?
Yeah, it was exciting. I think that's what I was after. It seemed like you were just like peg. You weren't really that important in finance. And I think it's changed a lot though. Like since that was maybe 5 or 6 years ago now, I think finance to be competitive and to get new grads because they have been losing to tech, I think they've changed the culture and things have improved. But no, I think the excitement in working in tech, even still in Web2, but definitely now Web3, you get to do so many different things. No days sounds cliche, but no days really the same. And you really get to, I think, coming from a space where I was trying to change my career, like I thought I wanted to be a financial analyst or do investing and just wanted to get into a startup, I could really do whatever I wanted. And SmartEmail was a great place where you were able to do that. So if I wanted to explore product management, or if I wanted to explore marketing or customer success, I could do all those roles in a little tiny chunks to figure out what I liked, which I think is a great piece of startups.
Yeah, wow. You definitely learned so much.
Did you have that locked in before you moved to Australia, or did you just purely take that leap and move to Australia and then work out what you wanted to do from there?
Yeah, we were planning on moving over. So I was just over for a visit. My partner is Australian. So we'd come over. I was applying for a few jobs saying, hey, we're going to move over in, I think, 1 or 2 months. And then, yeah, luckily met the founders of SmartEmail. Hit it off really well. And then, yeah, went on a pretty exciting like 5-year journey together.
Can you talk us through what Web3 actually is? But before that, could you briefly outline what Web1 and Web2 is?
Yeah, for sure. So Chris Dixon from A16Z or A16Z, I guess, has a good mental model around it. So Web 1 is essentially when you could just post your web page on the internet. So I'm saying, hello, world, I'm here. And nobody could really interact with it. Web 2 is when users actually go on the internet and interact with the web pages, but also interact with each other. So going on Facebook and chatting to your friends, or going on a MySpace page and leaving comments. And then Web 3, I think it sometimes gets talked about like a whole new internet, but it's not really that. It's really another layer on top of the internet that lets people communicate in ways that they would in the real world, or yeah, IRL, or in the physical world, I guess, is a better explanation of it. So it really introduces ownership models. So ownership over your money, so tokens and crypto and Bitcoin, which are fungibles, or I think fungies is the fun term, that you can have ownership over money and trade between each other and interact with each other. And then you have non-fungibles or NFTs now. And with those, you can have ownership over ape pictures or crypto punks, or you could have ownership over community things like memberships for a certain band or club. So it's really just another layer on the internet that helps us communicate in the ways I think we generally do in the physical world.
Yeah, you put that perfectly, and simple as well.
There's definitely, I don't know if there's even overhype, and as you kind of explain, like Web3 does seem like this new, like mysterious, it's going to solve all our problems. I don't know, it just seems like this crazy new thing. And that's probably because it's probably a lot of people's first time hearing about that we've actually had Web 1 and Web 2 before. It's just an iteration of it, if that kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot better marketing term than just crypto. I think it's helped pump all our bags, probably. Yeah. I'm happy with it.
I think that's like perfect. I guess to dive into, I guess, what Minky is. What are you and the team doing, and what are you trying to, I guess, solve at the end of the day?
Yeah, so I guess I'll talk about how we got started originally. So me and Marcos were both working at SmartML. I'd been building in the space since 2017. And Marcos, I think, had mined some Litecoin in 2015. And he's still mining ETH in his spare bedroom. Yeah, I don't think his wife was very happy about that. But he was very, like, almost towards a crypto native. And we had a few friends from like 2018, 2017 that had built some DeFi protocols like MStable. So we were pretty aware of the space and a lot of fun during DeFi summer. But we were explaining yield farming to each other because Marcos's primary source, I guess, of earning income through crypto was through mining. So we're explaining Curve, which is essentially a low slippage exchange where you can just swap between stable coins. And if you provide liquidity to the protocol, so you put your stable coin in there so people can trade between them, you can earn trading fees or yield. So I was explaining it to Marcos. He was a pretty technical guy, obviously CTO of the startup, of a 20-person startup. He's now founding a crypto startup. And it was just really hard. Like, he's like, oh, I have to spend hours on YouTube to even understand this. And if I can't understand it, and I'm scared to put my money in, it's probably extremely hard for a normal person who's maybe even just like crypto curious or new to the space in general to earn these really great yields and interest rates. Curve's not really an interest rate, but yeah, in other protocols, an interest rate that is really inaccessible in traditional finance. So like, okay, let's go and build this. And the idea was to build really Revolut, but powered by crypto, because we had gone to a dev retreat together in 2018, I think, in Lithuania, and me coming from Australia, him from Portugal. The tool that we used to pay each other back for beer or pay each other back for dinner was Revolut. And it was this cool tool that no matter where you were in the world, you almost had the same like global bank account. It's not so global. I think they're at about 7 countries, which is way more impressive than any other bank account. But it's very hard to get to that international scale as a traditional fintech. So like, hey, all the tools that are in Revolut now are built with crypto. You have these layer twos coming online, which with much lower transaction speeds, so people can actually use crypto properly. So let's go build a global Revolut using DeFi. And yeah, we're about a week away now from launching it, which is pretty exciting.
So before we pressed record on this episode, you were talking about being in week 4 of the StartMate program that you're in at the moment. Can you just explain to the listeners about that just briefly?
StartMate Accelerator is a startup accelerator. How I like to describe it is the Australian version of YC. They probably don't like that description so much, but it's an easy way to explain it to US investors or things like that. But essentially, it's a 12-week program that they get startups from across Australia and New Zealand. I think 450 or more startups apply, and it gets narrowed down to about 18. And you get exposed to this massive network, which I'm not even sure the number now, but it seems seemingly endless. Like whatever problem you have or whatever thing you want to explore, there's someone that's an expert in that field. And you also get to work with them on a weekly basis with some mentors and with the cohort in general to get talks and seminars from some of the best people in startup land in Australia.
far out, like what Michael Bacco has been adding or building to that network and really just bringing the investors and people that are have a wealth of knowledge in the space for you guys to be around and to bounce ideas from is incredible.
Yeah, yeah. When I was at SmartML in 2017, we actually went through the accelerator back then. And I think Batco joined probably in 2018. But just to see the growth of StartMate in the last 5 years is really incredible. It was a pretty big network then, but now you couldn't even put a number on how big it seems. It seems like it's the entire Australian ecosystem for startups in one accelerator, which is really awesome.
Wow. So for people that do have an idea, next big business idea or technology solution, they would apply for this accelerator program. They would get refined if their idea is good enough. And then obviously funding would come off the back of that. And then would they also, as you said, provide you with your network and allow you to bounce questions off each other? But do they also help a lot with the process of the whole process from the ideation to actually getting it implemented into the system?
Yeah, I'm not so sure on the ideation side, just because I guess we were a bit further along then. We had already raised a pre-seed round and pretty much had like a product to show investors or people by the time we joined StartMate. But I think it is from the ideation stage. I think they also have like an early bets fund that funds people that are very, very early with smaller investments and work with them, I think, in a shorter program for that as well. So it really is all-encompassing too. And now they have the fellowship program that trains students. And then I think even like the engineering fellowship, which gets devs from kind of from web one or even web zero, I guess, into startups.
When Ben and I were brainstorming questions for this interview, we were thinking, given this is such a new technology, not only do you need to market your service like any other company, you also need to educate people at the same time what the technology is, why should they be a part of it, and what they can gain from being within the technology and using the technology. What are some challenges you and the team at Minky have faced with this, and how have you been able to onboard new users?
Yeah, it's really, I think, one of the toughest challenges in tech. And we think it's the biggest opportunity. Just to give some context, I guess, since, 2000s, like the early 2000s, every single largest company in the world has been displaced by tech, or generally like technology first companies. But the top banks, at least in the US, essentially in Australia as well, the top banks in the 1970s are the exact same top banks that they are today in the 2020s. And that seemingly, some will argue that it's going to be like that forever. But DeFi is actually the first tool where you can actually disintermediate the banks and have really like a peer-to-peer lending or saving and borrowing tool that's just replaces essentially hundreds of thousands of people at the end of the day. With smart contracts and technology. So it's this super hard challenge because it's not like we're competing with companies like Facebook that have been around for 10 years. We're competing with companies that have gained this trust over decades, almost a century now. So how we do it is really like focus one on innovation. And because I think especially our generation won something more innovative. I think in this ZERP world that we are, 0% interest rates, it is hard to save money and put your money to work. So some of us are chasing meme coin glory, but it's not for everyone. It's generally not great financial advice to do that. So we have to figure out new and innovative ways to put our money to work and earn savings that the last generation was able to access. And I think DeFi is what brings that. I guess the challenge that we have to take, and I guess what we're trying to solve is making it really accessible for users, because a lot of these crypto native terms like gas fees and Gwei, they don't really make sense to someone that is new in the space, but really they're just crypto terms. It's not like a new thing that's been created. It's just a transaction fee. So what we try to do with Minky is obscure away a lot of these things and make it so it feels, looks, and feels exactly like Revolut or your fintech, but is purely powered by DeFi in the background. So I can give one a good example. When you access a savings protocol or even like Uniswap or anything like that, you have to approve your tokens to be used. For most users, it's a scary thing. Like, oh, I have to approve my tokens to be used. Are they taking it from me? But does that transaction really need to be there for a user? So we kind of pull that step back and move it into like an open an account. So yeah, you're opening an Aave savings account or you're opening a Uniswap trading account, and you can, these are the risks here, open account, and that runs the approval transaction instead. And then obscuring away things like we're on the Polygon network, which is low fees. So instead of ETH, you're using Matic to pay for your transactions. So we use things like Biconomy, which is a relayer, which essentially allows us to pay for some transactions for the users. So we can instead take USDC for the transaction. So they're just using US dollars, and we're essentially taking the US dollars, trading it for Matic, and paying for their transaction with that. So yeah, we're doing a lot of like innovative things like that just to try to make it feel like a bank account. Yeah, it's a huge challenge, but super fun to do at the same time.
Yeah, wow. I know you obviously haven't launched Minky yet. You're coming up to the next couple of weeks, which is exciting. What's the, I guess, user experience going to look like? Like from when they first download the app, I guess from looking at the your website, we can see you can range from a 3% to 11% interest rate on your savings. Can you talk us through, I guess, how that'll look like from, I guess, a customer's perspective?
Yes. Yeah, so you download the app, you use Apple Pay to top up. So right now it's with USDC. Again, we try to obscure this part away. So generally there's three stable coins, USDC, DAI, and Tether. We don't need to get into the politics of those, but we choose USDC and we put the other ones where you can swaps of those in the settings. So instead you just go in, you top up in US dollars with Apple Pay. That takes three clicks, and then you can open your account. To open your account, you prepay for transactions. So this is where we pay for the transactions. So you prepay one Matic, which I think right now is about 170 US dollars, and that will cover 1,000 transactions. So you make that swap, and now your wallet's funded, you have your money in, and then you save. So we give you direct access to the savings protocol. Right now at launch, it'll be with Aave. So that last year, I think, netted about a variable rate of average of 8% across 2021. It's trending a bit lower this year, but you go directly into Aave, open an account, which approves your token, your USDC, and you deposit into Aave, and then you earn interest. It really is interest. It's a lending protocol, just like a bank would work. You put your money in and people borrow it. And that gets added to your account every block that's mined, I think on Polygon, which I think is every 2.4 seconds. So you see that money taking up every second, which is pretty cool.
Jeez, there'd be so much back-end stuff to that. Like even listen to you talk about the different crypto and blockchain technology you're building on, like to know what you guys have done with the technology and it's all new. That would have been crazy for you guys to try and dive into that.
Yeah, the space has actually come a long way. So building for this in the space back in 2017, 2018, a lot of the developer tooling and things were very new then, because that was kind of the Ethereum ICO era and everybody started building then. But the infrastructure to build, the APIs to build, just weren't there. But now 5 years later, they are. And maybe from like a new developer going into the space, it probably still isn't mature as maybe building on Shopify. But I guess seeing this growth over the last 5 years, from my perspective at least, yeah, it's way better. So yeah, I'll shill Ethereum. I think Ethereum, I guess from a philosophical perspective, I really agree with decentralization and the Ethereum ethos, but I also think it's really, in terms of developer tooling and resources and also the community who will help you build and help you market your products. I think it's the best community out there.
Yeah, wow. We hear a lot of people, I guess, on Twitter, and it's kind of like a classic Bitcoiner slogan, like not your keys, not your coins. How does that work in this case? Like, do you own one of the keys? Does the consumer, like the customer, own the other? Or how does that sort of work from a security point of view?
Yeah, right now it is non-custodial. So you can back up your keys to your key store on your device. So, and that you can choose to back that up to the cloud as well. So yeah, and then you essentially have to write down your seed phrase as well. You don't need to these days because you can back it up and encrypt it. So that's how we do it. We think non-custodial is the way to go. There's been a few, I guess, not really hacks, but loss of funds in the centralized space. So not in the not your keys, not your coin space. So I think Celsius lost $54 million late last year in a front-end attack. And there was that incident with BlockFi where they were meant to be giving out rewards with dollars, but they were essentially giving out rewards in full Bitcoin instead. So luckily, they have some very generous VCs who put up the funds, but we don't really think from our like Minky's perspective that that's very sustainable in the long run. So yeah, we believe not your keys, not your coins, and you should go with a decentralized model. I mean, we'll be adding more tools later on. I think we can, there are options to create smart contract wallets. So there's a few wallets like that where you have to pay $2 at the start and you can deploy that. And then you have the concept of guardians. So you, rather than having your keys are essentially stored in different places, and then you can recover your wallet with an email or a phone number verification. So that's something we may add in the future to make it more accessible. But from, I guess, what we're trying to target now is just to get to as many users as possible, and having that kind of initial deployment fee holds it up a little bit.
So the average person listening to this conversation, earning an 8% interest rate on your savings or money sounds way too good to be true, especially in the current economic market now, and the interest rates that we're earning is basically 0.04 on our savings account. How are people actually able to achieve an 8% interest rate on their money through Minky?
Yeah. So generally the reason why we can generate such a high, or not us, but the protocols themselves can generate such a high interest rate is because the borrowers themselves are willing to pay more to borrow money compared to the traditional financial system. As a crypto company or as a crypto trader, accessing traditional finance when most of your wealth is in crypto is very hard. You'll get knocked back by most financial institutions and most banks, which I think the Australian government is probably doing a pretty good job now of trying to change that and stopping like wholesale debanking of the industry. But as a borrower who's either trying to get more leverage or trying to even just get liquidity so they can spend on everyday things and want to keep the upside in their crypto, doing that, it's not like you can store that in a bank and take an over-collateralized loan for, I don't know, 2%, which you expect in traditional finance. So you only have these decentralized models, or some centralized models now too, but people are generally willing to pay more. So they're willing to pay around 8% now. And the other aspect of that is the margins. So yeah, we kind of expect to save at 1%. But on the other side of that, for a personal loan, whether that be for a car or a small business, you're borrowing at 10%, where so there's this huge gap in between. I mean, even on a home loan, which is maybe 3%, where you're saving at 0.25%, there's a gap that is really caused by the bloat of the banks over time. It's just that's how much it costs to run a financial institution of that size. So you see these margins that make it horrible for average consumers. So by replacing that, essentially that entire institution with a smart contract, because that's all it is, you can get some much lower margins where people can save nearly the rates that someone would pay to borrow. So right now, I think, yeah, last year that was about 7-8%. And this year, I think it's trending down. So it should probably end up, my take, maybe around 5%. But there's only generally a 0.5 to 1% spread between the rates that you save and borrow at.
Yeah. Do you see it over time, I guess, trending towards the mean? Like, what do you think that is 5% at the end of the day?
I think this year, likely, that's what it'll be. It depends on the demand for borrowing too, right? I think right now the markets are obviously quite down off their highs, unfortunately. But so there's a lot of leverage taken out of the market. So there's less demand for borrowing and rates have gone much lower. But if we see like a reignition of the bull cycle or the bull run, then that demand will get much higher because people will want to take on more leverage and rates will move up. So it's really hard to tell. You just have to kind of predict what the market's going to do, which essentially no one can do.
I haven't been good at it.
But I do think, I guess, as it becomes more normalized and more people enter it, it will trend obviously lower, but it's still much. I think even at 8% is 40x higher than your bank, right? At 4%, yeah, it's still 20x higher than your bank. And it's easy to look at it in these small percentages and say, oh, that's not a big deal. But if you're saving for a house or you're saving for, like, I don't know, a large purchase, and you're constantly doing deposits over 5 years, your interest at 0.25% earned is a few hundred dollars, where at 8%, it's tens of thousands of dollars, depending on how much you're saving for, which is such a massive improvement and makes such a difference to the people who, just want a safe place and stable place to put their money. Because I think, we're probably like on the other end where we are investing in different things and we probably have more of a stomach for it to see our wealth move up and down quite quickly. But the reality is most people don't. And there's nothing wrong with that. I actually think that's the norm. We should be like that. Otherwise we get into pretty crazy situations. So giving people access to, I think, the rates that they deserve and what it should be is like what we're trying to solve.
That's awesome. I saw on your website, I think you put a blog post out, and we've talked about Warren Buffett quite often on this show, and he talks about the power of compound interest. And it's so true. People have been sitting at these ranging between 0.04% to maybe maximum like 2% with their savings account. But an 8% interest rate is basically what people are getting an average with the S&P 500, which is like pretty incredible that people can, I guess, compound that over long periods of times, which is what people do with their savings account. So that's awesome, like so empowering to, I guess, like the people at the end of the day.
Yeah. But our view is that like these banks are like the final boss. And generally the history of software shows that the middleman always gets destroyed, in whatever sector it is. And we actually never take a fee on this, on the interest rates that we pass on. So we give you direct access to Aave, or we give you direct access to MStable, and you get the full interest rate from there, which a lot of centralized providers don't give you. And that's kind of our ethos. We obviously have to make money in other ways, like on fees on top-ups. But yeah, the interest rates that you earn are all yours to keep.
It's so true. It's like David versus Goliath, but like Minky versus the banks. we're backing you. We're backing you. Yeah. So I guess the Bitcoin maximalists are all about complete decentralization, including peer-to-peer transactions and fully opposing the current financial system, which we're in today. In Minky's case, through the utilization of stable coins, I guess a marriage between the two systems is met. Is this how you think large crypto adoption will be achieved? I guess the marriage between the current system and, I guess, DeFi, rather than this complete peer-to-peer decentralized model?
Yeah, for sure. So I love Bitcoin. Even though I didn't love Bitcoin when I first found out about it, I think as times have changed, the macroeconomic situation, or even events in Canada recently, there's obviously a need for Bitcoin today. And even if Bitcoin is the shining star, I don't think we're going to go straight from fiat currency, it's government controlled, straight there. It seems a bit crazy. So what I see really as stablecoins is the bridge to get there. Because, I think we're quite lucky in Australia, in the US, and generally most Western countries, where our currencies are pretty stable over the last decade. But where my co-founder Marcos, he's in Portugal now, but he's from Brazil. When he started at SmartML, it was 3 real to $1. And within a year or two, it became 7 real to $1.
Wow.
And if you're a normal person, that just totally changes your life and for the worse, right? He was very lucky. He was earning in US dollars. He thought he was a genius. But for most people, that they have no control over that. And I think you're seeing this trend, especially like since the start of the pandemic, with the Argentinian peso, I think the Turkish lira, and many other currencies like through South America, and I think Europe and the Middle East, where they have lost massive amounts of value in comparison to the US dollar. And people here aren't there, or people there aren't going to be going, okay, let's go for Bitcoin. Obviously some are, but it's a huge jump to do that. The more logical jump for them is to get into US dollars, which is actually very, very hard to access if you're not well off. I think in Argentina now, you either keep US dollars in cash physically under your mattress, which is of course like super risky. And if anybody finds out, and the other option is to put it in a safety deposit box that takes massive fees. And also there's like corruption. And if anything happens, it's not like it's not your keys, your money, right? So crypto is actually the easiest way for people to get into US dollars in all of these countries. It's three clicks in Minky to get into stable coins, I think in 29 different currencies globally. And there's obviously other platforms like us too, not exactly what we're doing, but yes, at the end of the day, we're just like a high yield US dollar savings account. And that's how I describe it to my super normie friends who don't know anything about crypto. And we're the easiest way to get one in 29 different countries, which is really crazy. Even in Australia, it's quite hard to get a US dollar account. There's some really high fee ones, I think with NAB, and I think I had one with HSBC. But I remember at the start of the pandemic, you had a huge crash in the Aussie dollar compared to the US dollar. And I had all my assets essentially priced in US dollars, and I had all my savings in US dollars as well. I think everyone was like pouting because their stocks had gone down, and I was like pretty happy. I was like, I'm still up in AUD. It's not a big problem for me. And then I realized nobody else had did that here. But my background's half Filipino, half Indian, and my mom had always taught me to save in US dollars because she's from India. And yeah, generally, even Indian rupee, I think over the last year has massively dropped against the US dollar. So we were taught from a young age, if for your savings, don't keep it at the time in Canadian dollars, which is probably pretty safe though. But from her upbringing, it was, yeah, your savings should always be in US dollars. And that's what it's like for a lot of countries around the world. And crypto, I think, is a really amazing way for people to get access to that.
Yeah, I could imagine for all of these other countries, like for example, even Venezuela, like coming onto the Bitcoin, I guess like Bitcoin standard was quite revolutionary. Do you think that that'll be, this is, I guess, just like a more broader question. I would love to hear your opinion. Do you think that that'll be a broader trend for, I guess, other maybe South American countries or countries that currencies have been debased quite heavily?
Yeah, I don't think they'll go onto the Bitcoin standard. I think if maybe in decades that would happen, I think the world would probably be in a pretty bad place if we all went onto the Bitcoin standard. That's the reality of it. I think there'll be a mix between mostly US dollars in the form of stable coins and Bitcoin as functioning more as like a digital gold, because the US dollar still is getting debased against Bitcoin and other products too. I think it's definitely trending that way. And I think in a lot of, like you said, South American countries, Turkey, I think other than these like top 5 to 10 major currencies, you're going to see a lot of them get debased over the next decade. And we think, these people need a great way to get into the US dollars, and hopefully we can be the solution. And a lot of our team is like I said, my co-founder is Brazilian, and a lot of our team is from Brazilian background, but living elsewhere. So they really connect with the problem. They know the problem's there, and they just can't wait to get their friends and family onto it.
Wow. I'd imagine there'd be such a strong culture, I guess, in your company.
Yeah. Because you're actually like revolutionizing something and having a impact on something that is a big problem, that you guys can be the answer to that. Like, that's incredible to have that power.
Yeah. It's actually funny because we're localized now. So we just have to do the translations because everyone's very motivated to go to Brazil, obviously, so their friends and family can use the app too. But in Australia, our pitch is 8%. But actually on the Brazilian real and most fintechs, you get about 6%. So 8% people don't really care about. So our actually pitch has to totally change because we can generate more really than we're beholden to whatever protocols were built on top of. Yeah. So yeah, our pitch has to be more based around inflation and US dollars rather than just the interest rate.
True. But then I guess that same education piece is still there at the end of the day. Like as in I guess Australia, you've got the whole DeFi revolution, like what the hell do all of these different things mean? But then over there, it's explaining your currency is actually getting debased quite heavily.
And I think after the last year or two, people very much understand that too.
Yeah,
so it's a good time to do it.
So I'd love to, I guess, touch on regulation for a moment. So do you see regulation on cryptocurrency and stable coins being of any concern? There's been recent discussions from the SEC around stable coins and Bitcoin that they're not going to regulate them as hard as, I guess, the standard protocols or like XRP and some of these other cryptocurrencies. Are there any kind of major concerns that you guys have seen around stablecoins?
Yeah, I think I don't think governments are coming at from it from a bad way. I think having people move to stablecoins from government-controlled dollars really is a risk, especially if you have these entities that nobody really knows running the stablecoins. If that for some reason falls down, that could create massive financial shockwaves throughout the entire system. So I think that's mainly the motivation behind CBDCs. But I think my personal view is that as long as you have reputable companies forming these consortiums, that our current model with USDC or even decentralized dollars like DAI makes sense. I think that's probably a better way to go about it. But yeah, I guess on the crypto lending side, there has been, I think this week, BlockFi reached a settlement with SEC and that they had to pay $100 million and essentially admitting that they were selling illegal securities. So we as a company and me personally, I actually welcome more regulation in the space. I think it's really hard to play in an area where there are no boundaries. So what we do as a company, we try to essentially think, okay, if there were boundaries, what would they be and how would we play within them? I think it sucks as a legitimate builder in the space. If you have no regulation, you kind of open the door for anybody to do anything that they want and really harm consumers, which then gets like this black mark on the crypto industry as a whole, which affects not just them, but affects us because people think, oh, crypto, that's bad. These people got scammed. Regulation helps. Well, it might hurt some for the people that are actually legitimately playing in the space and are trying to help consumers at the end of the day and not scam them. I think it helps in the long run for sure.
Awesome. Now, one last question. This one we actually got from the audience. John Vlutos, thanks for putting this in. How important do you think the role of blockchain technology is for the future? And obviously, we've probably touched this within this episode, so just skim through it all.
Yeah, so one, I guess, from like a decentralized disintermediation point of view away from governments, like I said, it's probably not the biggest selling point in Australia. We're pretty lucky. But for in non-Western countries, it is a big problem. So I think blockchain has a huge role there to take money away from government, essentially, and put it in the hands of people, which is a bit cliche, but it does give you a lot more control of your money. I like to think it's kind of like the advance of civilization when there was separation of church and state. It's almost the separation of money and state now, and how much can we advance as a society, and how much more power can the individual have if that happens. But I guess in Western countries, it's really just a savings aspect. Like you don't have to have these huge institutions in the middle that are, to be honest, like gouging you on fees. You have a much better technology, a much better solution in terms of technology, where people can transact between each other in a totally open, permissionless, and trustless way, just as they would in the traditional finance world or the traditional real world, but without these intermediaries in the middle. I generally take.
We can just tell like you're a wealth of knowledge, and obviously you're in the space, so you're surrounded by it every day. But You can even tell us how excited you get about, I guess, explaining some of these topics. And yeah, it's really awesome to see. And I guess it's been a blessing to have you on the show as well. Before we wrap it up, we'd love to give you an opportunity to shout out where people can, I guess, find out a little bit more about you, when Minky will be launched, sort of everything in between.
Yeah, so we're rolling out early access next week. So I think over the next week or two, our waitlist is still open. So I'm assuming the podcast will be live then. So you can sign up for our waitlist now. We're also giving away 10K in Matic as a prize for someone on our waitlist. So yeah, you can fund your gas fees for the next century.
Yeah,
So yeah, sign up now. It's a pretty awesome prize. We work with Polygon and they've helped us push that too. So, and yeah, we'll be live publicly by the end of the month or start of the month or start of next month in March. So super exciting. And yeah, hope anyone listening jumps on. And let me know what, if you jump on too, let me know what you think. You can join our Discord, which is our little community as well. So give us feedback on the product because we'd love to hear more.
Yeah, awesome. We very definitely excited, both so. Jumped on the wait list. Yeah, we're super stoked to have a century's worth of gas fee paid for. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. My girlfriend today asked if she could sign up for the waitlist. Because, yeah, it's actually like an automatic process with a tool that we're using that picks the winner. So PR situation.
You heard it here first. Nah, awesome. Thank you so much, Josh. We really appreciate it. And we hope to catch up soon.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks, Reese. Yeah, great to be on.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you want to stay up to date with what's new, remember to press follow on your chosen podcast platform.
You can find us on Instagram and LinkedIn at Young Opportunist. Once again, thanks for listening.
Catch you next time.